China 21 is produced by the 21st Century China Center at UC San Diego School of Global Policy and Strategy. We are a university-based think tank that produces original research to anchor major policy discussions on China and its relationship to the United States. This podcast features expert voices, insights, and stories about China's economy, politics, society, and the implications for international affairs. Learn more at china.ucsd.edu. Welcome to China 21. I'm your host, Samuel Choi. In a speech at the recent 19th Party Congress, President Xi Jinping proclaimed that China has entered a new era where it should take center stage in the world. One major manifestation of this ambition is the Belt and Road Initiative, and having good relations with Southeast Asia is essential for China's foreign policy and development strategy. Here to shed light on the impact of Chinese investment and infrastructure projects in Southeast Asia is Somkiat Tankinovich, President of the Thailand Development Research Institute, or TDRI. Dr. Tankinovich is a leading Thai expert in the areas of trade and investment policies, innovation policy, education policy, and information, communication, and technology policy. He is an Eisenhower Fellow and a member of the Trilateral Commission. He obtained his PhD in computer science from Tokyo Institute of Technology. Dr. Tankinovich is a weekly commentator for Thai PBS, Thailand's public television. He has been instrumental in drafting many laws in Thailand. Under his leadership, the team of thinkers and researchers at Thailand Development and Research Institute was nominated Person of the Year in 2012 by the Bangkok Post for demonstrating that rational debate is the key to healing a fractured nation and advancing development. Dr. Tankinovich is currently a Pacific Leadership Fellow here at the Center on Global Transformation. He delivered a lecture on campus in which he shared his views on how Southeast Asian countries will continue to accelerate economic growth in the current economic and political climate. He discussed how countries in the region are working to accomplish the goals laid out in ASEAN Vision 2020. Dr. Tankinovich, thank you for being with us today.
My honor.
So to begin, I'd like to ask a broad question. How would you characterize the relationship between China and Thailand today?
China is Thailand's major trading partner and also our major source of foreign direct investment. China is number two in investors in Thailand after Japan, and one of the largest trading partner of Thailand in both in terms of export and import. China is also a major source of tourists to Thailand, constitute around one-third of the number of tourists in Thailand and one-fourth of the revenue generated from tourism in Thailand, which constitute around 13 billion US dollar per year. So China is very important to Thailand in terms of trade, in terms of tourism, and in terms of investment.
Thank you. And I know that while you're here in San Diego with us here, you are studying the US-Mexico cross-border development, especially in the sectors of telecommunications and biotech. I'm curious to know what lessons about the cross-border and development that you have gathered for Thailand and its neighbors. So maybe we can bring in an example of Thailand and China, in which the Made in China 2025 initiative is a strategic industrial policy which seeks to enhance the competitiveness of Chinese firms in high-tech industries that are globally competitive. But how does this square with the Thailand government's Thailand 4.0 initiative to boost the market of high-tech products?
First of all, the Thailand 4.0 vision of the Thai government is to boost Thailand into a high-income country by developing certain kinds of industries in Thailand, especially in the Eastern Economic Corridor, which border Cambodia and we built on previous infrastructure development in the past. We view that China vision of Made in China 2025 will contribute to the development of the Thailand 4.0 initiative, because we certainly cannot compete directly with China in industrial development. Mm-hmm. The scale in China is far much bigger than that in Thailand. For example, the Thailand 4.0 would like to create the industrial robots in Thailand. My personal assessment is that that would be very difficult, considering that China has a much larger scale. So my idea, and I think it is our study that indicate that rather than directly compete head-on with China, it would be a better idea for Thailand to use the cheap products produced from China and leverage that to make the Thailand 4.0 initiative a success. For example, we would like to develop new energy vehicles, for example, hybrid cars and finally the battery power car. I don't think we need to develop all the parts and components in Thailand, because in China they have very large battery facilities. So rather than completely develop on our own, we better use certain parts from China. The same can apply to high-performance medical devices. In Thailand, we have a large base of patients because Thailand is one of the major regional hub of medical hub in the Southeast Asia, and we would like to promote the sector further. So if Thailand can leverage on China cheap and high quality, high performance medical devices, our cost structure will be cheaper and we can compete more. So that's my idea. Mm-hmm. Not to compete with China, but to use China as our input and compete better with other regions.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier in terms of the tourism, about a third of the revenue comes from tourism from China. I'm assuming a part of that also relates to the medical tourism industry in Thailand. So how does that relate to the medical devices that you mentioned?
Medical tourists from China are still a really small proportion of the Chinese tourists into Thailand. Mm-hmm. Basically, they are really conventional tourists. But more and more China consumers are getting sophisticated, and they are also looking for a cheap destination for medical tourism. So even though currently we are not the destination for Chinese medical tourists, but I'm sure in the future we can attract more. Chinese medical tourists.
Mm-hmm. And now let's maybe zoom out into some of the more macro level investments. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned earlier, China's Belt and Road Initiative is their major stake in foreign policy and development, and has tremendous implications for its neighbors. So where do you see Thailand fit in this vision that China has? And specifically, if you can also address the status of the Sino-Thailand Railroad Project and the implications for China's or Thailand's development, as well as its internal politics and regional stability.
Thailand is not a key country in terms of the Belt and Road Initiative. I think from the Chinese perspective, not as important as Pakistan and Laos, PDR, and other countries in the region. But certainly we have been involved in the Belt and Road Initiative in a number of ways. I would like to give three examples. The first one, you already mentioned the high-speed rail. In this case, I think China would like to export its excess capacity in high-speed rail into Thailand. And the Chinese government and the Thai government are negotiating the conditions of the deal. Basically, we have agreed that it will be financed by the Thai government, but use China technology. Mm-hmm. But terms and conditions are yet to be specified, so they are working on that. Second project is the Thai Canal, which will link the South China Sea and the Andaman Sea in the Indian Ocean. This can be considered part of the Maritime Silk Road of China. Mm-hmm. That will reduce the cost of and the time of transportation from the Middle East, from the Indian Ocean to the Pacific side of China. This project is initiated by some Chinese business group, and it has been proposed to the Thai government, but I think it is really in a very early stage. Mm-hmm. And the key issue in this project is whether it is financially feasible, and also we need to also to consider the environmental impact of the project. Mm-hmm. The third one would be a project that China would like to develop the Mekong River by developed the navigation channel to be more efficient. Basically, they will would like to destroy certain islets in the Mekong River close to the Thai border and the Laos border, so that ships from China can access the Mekong River better and can get access to the South China Sea in any route. Mm-hmm. This project is quite controversial. Many Thai civil society groups protesting on the project on the grounds of the impacts of the environment and security of the project.
So you mentioned these three projects. Can you maybe give a little bit more update on what are some of the kind of financial arrangements that have already been made between Thai and Chinese governments, and if there's any pushback besides the kind of environmental concerns you mentioned in the Mekong River? Are there any pushbacks within the Thai government or maybe competition with mm-hmm. other Asian neighbors when it comes to these investment projects, especially the railroad mm-hmm. And the canal engineering projects?
The railroad project is the main issue is financial feasibility. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that high-speed rail takes a lot of time to break even, and without government support, it will not be financially feasible. So the Thai government has committed to do the project amidst certain opposition from the academy, from certain business groups on the grounds of the financial feasibility. Mm-hmm. Still, there are some pressure from China for Thailand to build this rail project. The Clark Canal project is really in its embryonic phase. I think we need to see the feasibility study first before understanding the whether who will gain and who will lose from this project. Mm-hmm. The Mekong navigation channel improvement project will not cost a lot of money, but the main concern would be environmental as well as security. Certain quarters in Thailand are afraid that if China can access the Mekong that easily, what would be the implication of the in terms of security to Thailand and also to our neighboring partners, which are Laos and Cambodia. Mm-hmm.
So as these projects get underway, kind of the obvious implications in the future would be there will be more Chinese coming into Thailand. But we all know historically, mm-hmm. There's always been trade with China and Thailand for centuries. And Thailand is also home to one of the largest overseas Chinese populations in the world. And many Thais are of partial Chinese descent. How do Thai people feel about this recent investment by the Chinese and all the new waves of workers and business people and government officials that will also come as a result of these investments?
First of all, China has become one of the largest foreign direct investor to Thailand. The amount of investment has jumped from less than half a billion US dollar in the year 27 to 13 billion US dollar last year. So it has been a huge increase in investment from China. And the sectors that China invested in Thailand are numerous. From the official statistics, we learned that China invests in rubber processing, in steel, in solar panel, and would invest in the future, really near future, in e-commerce, companies like Alibaba or Lazada, which also belongs to Alibaba, has a plan to invest in Thailand. But apart from these sectors, there are Chinese investment in Thailand that is not recorded in the official statistics. It is speculated that Chinese investors use a kind of nominee investment, using local Thai as a front to invest in certain sectors like agriculture, fruits, you know, tourism, and also other sectors as well. The Thai people are quite divided on the impacts of the Chinese investment in these sectors. Certainly, some people will gain from Chinese investment. Hotel, for example, will get booked more by Chinese inflow of tourists. And Thai people can use Alibaba as a platform to sell to the world. But there are some people who are very concerned about Chinese investment in Thailand because they are afraid that Chinese investor will dominate the whole supply chain. For example, they are not only buy fruits from Thailand, but they are also become wholesaler and retailer as well. And that will crowd out Thai business people. So they are worried about that. The Thai e-commerce community are also worried that rather than Alibaba will support Thai merchants to export overseas, it might be the case that Alibaba will dominate the whole e-commerce sector in Thailand, so they'll be crowded out. So that is the main concern. So there are plus and minuses from the Thai perspective.
So with these areas of concerns, have the Thai government began to think about policies or regulations on Chinese investment in Thailand?
There are some crackdowns. Last year, there was a crackdown on the so-called zero-dollar tourism from China, which basically the case that the Chinese business community dominate the whole supply chain of tourism in Thailand. So the worry from the Thai side is that the Thai side gets very little. So the government has cracked down that. But then the arrival of Chinese tourists dropped significantly. So the other side of the Thai tourism industries also felt the pain. So they lobbied the government to relax the regulations again. So there are losers and winners, and they are trying both to lobby the Thai government. So the Thai government are in a position that still to formulate a long-term policy, how to cope with long-term investment from China.
Can you talk a little bit more about agriculture, knowing that Thailand is a big exporter of rice and Chinese consumers of rice look to Thailand to provide not only good quality rice, but safe and environmentally sustainable rice. How has China's consumption patterns in the recent years affected the Thai agricultural sector?
For rice, China is a big one of major importer of rice from Thailand, but the I don't see any change in consumption patterns resulted from the increasing share of Chinese consumers. But there are certain agricultural products like durian and pomelo and mangosteen, these premium foods of Thailand have been imported into China in a very big amount. For example, durian alone, Thai durians are exported to China in large amount, roughly around the local production capacity. And the export value last year was around $700 million. So it's a big amount, and it has driven up the cost of the price of those fruits in Thailand. So durian are becoming more expensive than it used to be. and pomelo and mangosteen as well.
Have there been, besides the prices, have there been any effects on the actual use of the land and the crop diversity, because there is now more consumption on these premium fruits?
Not that I am aware of, because the Thai agricultural sector has been commercial agricultural agriculture for quite a long time. So there have been monocrops in certain areas, and when price changes, they keep they change the their production accordingly. For example, when durian get a better price, they produce more durian. But durian and other fruits are horticulture, which means it take a long time before we can change from certain crops to another crop.
Thank you. I would like to end with what's happening this week. So as President Trump visits the region with his American First stance, that is continually disinterested in trade pacts and further economic integration with Asian economies, at the same time set in the backdrop of China's continual buildup of its military and maritime sovereignty claims that have caused friction with several Southeast Asian nations, what are some concerns and opportunities from Thailand's perspective in light of this shifting power dynamics of China and United States?
Like it or not, the U.S. is seem to be withdrawing from Asia, at least under President Trump administration. Previously, under Obama administration, there was a strategy called Pivot to Asia, meaning that Asia is becoming really important to the U.S., and the U.S. would like to use Asia as a base to project its influence to the nearby region. Now, the U.S. Administration seems to be pulling away from Asia, or at least it has yet to articulate its foreign policy in Asia. So President Trump's visit to Asia this week will be really interesting. We would like to know what kind of foreign policy the U.S. have towards Asia. But if the U.S. is not as committed as it used to be in the Asian region, there will be a shift in the balance in China and United States, in the sense that China has become a really big economy and has also developed its political influence in the region. So naturally, small countries in Asia, Thailand included, and other ASEAN countries included, will be attracted towards China. In the case of Thailand, the ratio of export from Thailand to China has increased significantly during the past decade. Tourism income from China also increased fivefold during the past decade. FDI increased more than 25-fold. So China has become a really big partner of Thailand, and we depend more and more on China. And with dependence comes one vulnerabilities of the country, the smaller country. We are afraid that if there are some conflicts between our country and China in the future, we would not be in a position to bargain to resolve the dispute in our favor. We see in the case that Japanese goods were boycotted after some territorial disputes between China and Japan, and bananas from the Philippines faced stricter inspection after territorial disputes between the Philippines and China. Mm-hmm. And also outward tourists were discouraged from going to Korea after installation of THAAD in South Korea. Mm-hmm. So even though Thailand does not share any border and currently have no territorial dispute with China, we are a little bit concerned that if the balance of power in the region change, we will have less and less bargaining power against China.
So how does that relate to the makeup of ASEAN going forward in both kind of economic, regional, integration, but also some of the bargaining powers you mentioned within Southeast Asian states vis-a-vis China?
Many people have hoped that ASEAN would come together and collectively bargain with China so that we have more bargaining power. Mm. I don't think that is really realistic, at least judging from what we have seen in the past. ASEAN has never been united in its political position as well as economic position against China. The case is very clear when we considered the disputes in the South China Sea. Cambodians and Laos always argue in favor of China, while other countries like Vietnam, Indonesia, and the Philippines are having disputes with China. So in the past, ASEAN found it difficult to issue a joint communique that explicitly states ASEAN position. So even though it would be a nice thing to have ASEAN united and work together bargaining with China, that won't be a thing that I think we can realistically expect.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us, and we wish you all the best as you can finish your time here in San Diego, and as you return to Thailand, continue to help Thailand grow. We thank you so much for your work and your insights today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to China 21, the podcast of the 21st Century China Center at UC San Diego School of Global Policy and Strategy. Visit china.ucsd.edu and connect with us on social media. 谢谢大家.